Nothing to you. You'd hardly be here in this filthy jail attempting to have her hanged for theft. Araminta was saved from having to reply by the arrival of the magistrate, who was followed by an extremely grumpy-looking warden, who also happened to be sporting a rather stunning black eye. As the warden had spanked her on the bottom while shoving her into her cell, Sophie really couldn't help but smile.
"What is going on here?" the magistrate demanded.
"This woman," Benedict said, his loud, deep voice effectively blotting out all other attempts at an answer,
"has accused my fiancée of theft."
Fiancée? Sophie just managed to snap her mouth closed. But even so, she had to clutch tightly onto the bars of her cell because her legs had turned to instant water.
"Fiancée?"
Araminta gasped. The magistrate straightened.
"And precisely who are you, sir?"
he asked, clearly aware that Benedict was someone important, even if he wasn't positive who. Benedict crossed his arms as he said his name. The magistrate paled.
Any relation to the Viscount?"
"He's my brother."
"And she's..."
he gulped as he pointed to Sophie.
"Your fiancée?"
Sophie waited for some sort of supernatural sign to stir the air, branding Benedict as a liar. But to her surprise, nothing happened. Lady Bridgerton was even nodding.
"You can't marry her,"
Araminta insisted. Benedict turned to his mother.
"Is there any reason I need to consult Lady Penwood about this?"
"None that I can think of,"
Lady Bridgerton replied.
"She is nothing but a whore," Araminta hissed.
"Her mother was a whore, and blood runs..."
Benedict had her by the throat before anyone was even aware that he had moved.
"Don't," he warned, "make me hit you."
The magistrate tapped Benedict on the shoulder.
"You really ought to let her go."
"Might I muzzle her?"
The magistrate looked torn, but eventually he shook his head. With obvious reluctance, Benedict released Araminta.
"If you marry her,"
Araminta said, rubbing her throat,
"I shall make sure everyone knows exactly what she is. The bastard daughter of a whore."
The magistrate turned to Araminta with a stern expression.
"I don't think we need that sort of language."
"I can assure you I am not in the habit of speaking in such a manner,"
she replied, sniffing disdainfully.
"But the occasion warrants strong speech."
Sophie actually bit her knuckle as she stared at Benedict, who was flexing and unflexing his fingers in a most menacing manner. Clearly he felt the occasion warranted strong fists. The magistrate cleared his throat.
"You accuse her of a very serious crime,"
he gulped,
"and she's going to be married to a Bridgerton."
"I am the Countess of Penwood,"
she shrilled.
"Countess!"
The magistrate looked back and forth between the occupants of the room. As a countess, Araminta outranked everyone, but at the same time, she was only one Penwood against two Bridgertons, one of whom was very large, visibly angry, and had already planted his fist in the warden's eye.
"She stole from me!"
"No, you stole from her!"
Benedict roared. The room fell into instant silence.
"You stole her very childhood,"
Benedict said, his body shaking with rage. There were huge gaps in his knowledge of Sophie's life, but somehow he knew that this woman had caused much of the pain that lurked behind her green eyes. And he'd have been willing to bet that her dear, departed papa was responsible for the rest. Benedict turned to the magistrate and said,
"My fiancée is the bastard daughter of the late Earl of Penwood, and that is why the Dowager Countess has falsely accused her of theft. It is revenge and hate, pure and simple."
The magistrate looked from Benedict to Araminta, and then finally to Sophie.
"Is this true?"
he asked her.
"Have you been falsely accused?"
"She took the shoe clips!"
Araminta shrieked.
"I swear on my husband's grave, she took the shoe clips!"
"Oh, for the love of God, Mother! I took the shoe clips."
Sophie's mouth fell open.
"Posy?"
Benedict looked at the newcomer, a short, slightly pudgy young woman, who was obviously the Countess's daughter, then glanced back to Sophie, who had gone white as a sheet.
"Get out of here," Araminta hissed. "You have no place in these proceedings."
"Obviously she does," the magistrate said, turning to Araminta, "if she took the shoe clips. Do you want to have her charged?"
"She's my daughter."
"Put me in the cell with Sophie,"
Posy said dramatically, clasping one of her hands to her breast with great effect.
"If she is transported for theft, then I must be as well."
For the first time in several days, Benedict found himself smiling. The warden took out his keys.
"Sir,"
he said hesitantly, nudging the magistrate.
"Put those away,"
the magistrate snapped.
"We're not incarcerating the Countess's daughter."
"Do not put those away,"
Lady Bridgerton cut in. "I want my future daughter-in-law released immediately." The warden looked helplessly at the magistrate.
"Oh, very well,"
the magistrate said, jabbing his finger in Sophie's direction.
"Let that one free, but no one is going anywhere until I have this sorted out."
Araminta bristled in protest, but Sophie was duly released. She started to run to Benedict, but the magistrate held out a restraining arm.
"Not so fast," he warned. "We'll be having no lovey-dovey reunions until I figure out who is to be arrested." "No one is to be arrested," Benedict growled.
"She is going to Australia,"
Araminta cried out, pointing towards Sophie.
"Put me in the cell,"
Posy sighed, placing the back of her hand against her brow.
"I did it." "Posy, will you be quiet?"
Sophie whispered.
"Trust me, you do not want to be in that cell. It's dreadful, and there are rats."
Posy started inching away from the cell.
"You will never see another invitation again in this town,"
Lady Bridgerton said to Araminta.
"I am a countess,"
Araminta hissed.
"And I am more popular,"
Lady Bridgerton returned, the snide words so out of character that both Benedict's and Sophie's mouths dropped open.
"Enough,"
the magistrate said. He turned to Posy, pointing to Araminta, as he said,
"Is she your mother?"
Posy nodded.
"And you said you stole the shoe clips?"
Posy nodded again.
"And no one stole her wedding ring. It's in her jewellery box at home."
No one gasped, because no one was terribly surprised. But Araminta said, nonetheless,
"It is not!"
"Your other jewellery box,"
Posy clarified.
"The one you keep in the third drawer from the left."
Araminta paled.
The magistrate said, "You don't seem to have a very good case against Miss Beckett, Lady Penwood."
Araminta began to shake with rage, her outstretched arm quivering as she pointed one long finger at Sophie.
"She stole from me,"
she said in a deadly low voice, before turning furious eyes on Posy.
"My daughter is lying. I do not know why, and I certainly do not know what she hopes to gain. But she is lying."
Something very uncomfortable began to churn in Sophie's stomach. Posy was going to be in horrible trouble when she went home. There was no telling what Araminta would do in retaliation for such public humiliation. She couldn't let Posy take the blame for her. She had to...
"Posy didn't!"
The words burst forth from her mouth before she had a chance to think. But she didn't manage to finish her sentence because Posy elbowed her in the belly. Hard.
"Did you say something?"
the magistrate inquired. Sophie shook her head, completely unable to speak. Posy had knocked her breath clear to Scotland. The magistrate let out a weary sigh and raked his hand through his thinning blonde hair. He looked at Posy, then at Sophie, then Araminta, then Benedict. Lady Bridgerton cleared her throat, forcing him to look at her too.
"Clearly,"
the magistrate said, looking very much as if he'd rather be anywhere other than where he was,
"this is about a great deal more than a stolen shoe clip."
"Shoe clips,"
Araminta sniffed.
"There were two of them."
"Regardless,"
the magistrate ground out,
You all obviously detest one another, and I would like to know why before I go ahead and charge anyone." For a second, no one spoke. Then everyone spoke. "Silence!" the magistrate roared. "You," he said, pointing at Sophie. "Start." Now that Sophie actually had the floor, she felt terribly self-conscious. The magistrate cleared his throat, loudly.
"What he said was correct,"
Sophie said quickly, pointing to Benedict.
"I am the daughter of the Earl of Penwood, although I was never acknowledged as such."
Araminta opened her mouth to say something, but the magistrate sent her such a withering glare that she kept quiet.
"I lived at Penwood Park for 7 years, before she married the Earl," she continued, motioning to Araminta. "The Earl said that he was my guardian, but everyone knew the truth."
She paused, remembering her father's face, and thinking that she ought not be so surprised that she couldn't picture him with a smile.
"I look a great deal like him," she said. "I knew your father," Lady Bridgerton said softly, "and your aunt. It explains why I've always thought you looked so familiar."
Sophie flashed her a small, grateful smile. Something in Lady Bridgerton's tone was very reassuring, and it made her feel a little warmer inside, a little more secure.
"Please continue," the magistrate said.
Sophie gave him a nod, then added,
"When the Earl married the Countess, she didn't want me living there, but the Earl insisted. I rarely saw him, and I don't think he thought very much of me. But he did see me as his responsibility, and he wouldn't allow her to boot me out. But when he died..."
Sophie stopped and swallowed, trying to get past the lump in her throat. She'd never actually told her story to anyone before. The words seemed strange and foreign coming from her mouth.
"When he died," she continued, "his will specified that Lady Penwood's portion would be trebled if she kept me in her household until I turned 20. So she did. But my position changed dramatically. I became a servant. Well, not really a servant."
Sophie smiled wryly.
"A servant is paid. So I was really more like a slave."
Sophie looked over at Araminta. She was standing with her arms crossed and her nose tipped in the air. Her lips were pursed tightly, and it suddenly struck Sophie how very many times before she had seen that exact same expression on Araminta's face, more times than she could dare to count, enough times to have broken her soul. Yet here she was, dirty and penniless to be sure, but with her mind and spirit still strong. "Sophie," Benedict asked, gazing at her with a concerned expression,
"is everything all right?"
She nodded slowly, because she was just coming to realise that everything was all right. The man she loved had, in a rather roundabout way, just asked her to marry him. Araminta was finally about to receive the drubbing she deserved, at the hands of the Bridgertons, no less, who would leave her in shreds by the time they were through. And Posy, now that might have been the loveliest of all. Posy, who had always wanted to be a sister to her, who had never quite had the courage to be herself, had stood up to her mother, and quite possibly saved the day. Sophie was 100% certain that if Benedict had not come and declared her his fiancée, Posy's testimony would have been the only thing to save her from transportation, or maybe even execution. And Sophie knew better than anyone that Posy would pay dearly for her courage. Araminta was probably already plotting how to make her life a living hell. Yes, everything was all right, and Sophie suddenly found herself standing a little straighter as she said,
"Allow me to finish my story. After the Earl died, Lady Penwood kept me on as her unpaid lady's maid, although in truth I was made to do the work of three maids. You know, Lady Whistledown said that very thing just last month,"
Posy said excitedly.
"I told Mother that she..."
"Posy, shut up!"
Araminta snapped.
"When I turned 20,
Sophie continued,
"she didn't turn me out. To this day, I don't know why.
I think we've heard enough, Araminta said.
I don't think we've heard nearly enough, Benedict snapped.
Sophie looked to the magistrate for guidance. At his nod, she continued. I can only deduce that she rather enjoyed having someone to order about. Or maybe she just liked having a maid she didn't have to pay. There was nothing left from his will.
That's not true,
Posy blurted out. Sophie turned to her in shock.
He did leave you money,
Posy insisted. Sophie felt her jaw go slack.
That's not possible. I had nothing. My father saw to my welfare up to age 20, but after that...
After that,
Posy said rather forcefully,
you had a dowry. A dowry?
Sophie whispered.
That's not true, Araminta shrilled.
It is true,
Posy insisted.
You ought not leave incriminating evidence about Mother. I read a copy of the Earl's will last year.
She turned to the rest of the room and said,
it was in the same box where she put her wedding band. You stole my dowry,
Sophie said, her voice barely more than breath. All these years, she'd thought her father had left her with nothing. She'd known that he'd never loved her, that he saw her as little more than his responsibility. But it had stung that he'd left dowries for Rosamond and Posy, who were not even his blood daughters, and not for her. She'd never really thought that he'd ignored her on purpose. In all truth, she'd mostly felt forgotten, which had felt worse than a deliberate snub would have done.
He left me a dowry, she said dazedly.
Then, to Benedict,
I have a dowry.
I don't care if you have a dowry, Benedict replied. I don't need it.
I care,
Sophie said.
I thought he'd forgotten me. All these years, I'd thought he'd written up his will and simply forgotten about me. I know he couldn't really leave money to his bastard daughter, but he'd told all the world I was his ward. There was no reason he couldn't provide for his ward.
For some reason, she looked to Lady Bridgerton.
He could have provided for a ward. People do that all the time.
The magistrate cleared his throat and turned on Araminta.
And what has happened to her dowry?
Araminta said nothing.
Lady Bridgerton cleared her throat.
I don't think it's terribly legal, she said, to embezzle a young woman's dowry.
She smiled, a slow, satisfied sort of smile.
Eh, Araminta?
Chapter 23.
Lady Penwood appears to have left town. So does Lady Bridgerton. Interesting.
Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 18th of June, 1817. Benedict decided he had never loved his mother more than he did at that very minute. He was trying not to grin, but it was exceedingly difficult, with Lady Penwood gasping like a fish on land. The magistrate's eyes bugged out.
You're not suggesting I arrest the Countess?
No, of course not, Violet demurred. She'd likely go free. The aristocracy rarely pays for its crimes. But, she added, tilting her head slightly to the side as she gave Lady Penwood a very pointed glance, if you were to arrest her, it would be terribly embarrassing while she defended the charges.
What are you trying to say?
Lady Penwood asked, through decidedly clenched teeth. Violet turned to the magistrate.
Might I have a few moments alone with Lady Penwood?
Of course, my lady.
He gave her a gruff nod, then barked,
Everyone, out!
No,
Violet said with a sweet smile as she pressed something that looked suspiciously like a pound note into his palm.
My family may stay.
The magistrate blushed slightly, then grabbed the warden's arm and yanked him out of the room.
There now,
Violet murmured.
Where were we?
Benedict beamed with pride as he watched his mother march right up to Lady Penwood and stare her down. He stole a glance at Sophie. Her mouth was hanging open.
My son is going to marry Sophie, Violet said,
And you are going to tell anyone who will listen that she was the ward of your late husband.
I will never lie for her,
Lady Penwood shot back. Violet shrugged. Fine. Then you can expect my solicitors to begin looking for Sophie's dowry immediately. After all, Benedict will be entitled to it once he marries her.
Benedict slipped his arm around Sophie's waist and gave her a light squeeze.
If someone asks me, Lady Penwood ground out, I will confirm whatever story you bandy about, but do not expect me to go out of my way to help her.
Violet pretended to mull that over, then said,
Excellent. I do believe that will do nicely.
She turned to her son. Benedict? He gave her a sharp nod. His mother turned back to Lady Penwood.
Sophie's father was named Charles Becket, and he was a distant cousin of the Earl's, no?
Lady Penwood looked as if she'd swallowed a bad clam, but she nodded nonetheless. Violet pointedly turned her back on the Countess and said,
I'm sure some members of the Ton will consider her a bit shabby, since obviously nobody will be familiar with her family, but at least she will be respectable. After all,
she turned back around and flashed a wide smile at Araminta.
There is that connection with the Penwoods.
Araminta let out a strange growling sound. It was all Benedict could do not to laugh.
Oh, Magistrate!
Violet called out, and when he bustled back into the room, she smiled gamely at him and said,
I believe my work here is done.
He let out a sigh of relief, saying,
Then I don't have to arrest anyone?
It seems not.
He practically sagged against the wall.
Well, I am leaving,
Lady Penwood announced, as if anyone might possibly miss her. She turned to her daughter with furious eyes.
Come along, Posy!
Benedict watched as the blood quite literally drained from Posy's face. But before he could intervene, Sophie jumped forward, blurting out,
Lady Bridgerton!
Just as Araminta roared,
Now!
Yes, dear.
Sophie grabbed Violet's arm and pulled her close enough to whisper something in her ear.
Quite right, Violet said. She turned to Posy. Miss Gunningworth. Actually, it's Miss Riling,
Posy corrected.
The Earl never adopted me.
Of course.
Miss Riling, how old are you?
21, my lady.
Well, that's certainly old enough to make your own decisions. Would you like to come to my home for a visit?
Oh, yes.
Posy, you may not go live with the Bridgertons,
Araminta ordered. Violet ignored her completely as she said to Posy,
I believe I will quit London early this season. Would you care to join us for an extended stay in Kent?
Posy nodded quickly.
I would be much obliged. That settles it, then.
That does not settle it,
Araminta snapped.
She is my daughter and
Benedict,
Lady Bridgerton said in a rather bored voice.
What was the name of my solicitor?
Go, Araminta spat at Posy, and don't ever darken my door again.
For the first time that afternoon, Posy began to look a little scared. It didn't help when her mother stalked right up to her and hissed straight in her face,
If you go with them now, you are dead to me. Do you understand? Dead!
Posy threw a panicked look at Violet, who immediately stepped forward and linked their arms together.
It's all right, Posy, Violet said softly. You may stay with us as long as you wish.
Sophie stepped forward and slid her arm through Posy's free one.
Now we will be sisters truly,
she said, leaning forward and giving her a kiss on the cheek.
Oh, Sophie,
Posy cried out, a well of tears bursting forth.
I'm so sorry. I never stood up for you. I should have said something. I should have done something, but...
Sophie shook her head.
You were young. I was young. And I know better than anyone how difficult it is to defy her.
She threw a scathing glare at Araminta.
Don't you speak to me that way!
Araminta seethed. raising her hand as if to strike.
Ah!
Violet cut in.
The solicitors, Lady Penwood. Don't forget the solicitors.
Araminta dropped her hand, but she looked as if she might spontaneously burst into flame at any moment.
Benedict!
Violet called out.
How quickly could we be at the solicitor's office?
Grinning inside, he gave his chin a thoughtful stroke.
They're not too terribly far away. 20 minutes? 30 if the roads are full.
Araminta shook with rage as she directed her words at Violet.
Take her, then. She's never been anything to me but a disappointment. And you can expect to be stuck with her until your dying day, as no one is likely to offer for her. I have to bribe men just to ask her to dance.
And then the strangest thing occurred. Sophie began to shake. Her skin turned red, her teeth clenched, and the most amazing roar burst forth from her mouth. And before anyone could even think to intervene, she had planted her fist squarely into Araminta's left eye and sent the older woman sprawling. Benedict had thought that nothing could have surprised him more than his mother's heretofore undetected Machiavellian streak. He was wrong.
That, Sophie hissed, is not for stealing my dowry. It's not for all the times you tried to boot me out of my house before my father died. And it's not even for turning me into your personal slave.
Sophie, Benedict said mildly. What, then, is it for?
Sophie's eyes never wavered off of Araminta's face as she said,
That was for not loving your daughters equally.
Posy began to bawl.
There's a special place in hell for mothers like you,
Sophie said, her voice dangerously low.
You know, the magistrate squeaked, we really do need to clear this cell out for the next occupant.
He's right,
Violet said quickly, stepping in front of Sophie before she decided to start kicking Araminta. She turned to Posy.
Have you any belongings you wish to retrieve?
Posy shook her head. Violet's eyes turned sad as she gave Posy's hand a little squeeze.
We shall make new memories for you, my dear.
Araminta rose to her feet, gave Posy one last horrific glare, then stalked away.
Well, Violet declared, planting her hands on her hips, I thought she would never leave.
Benedict disengaged his arm from Sophie's waist with a murmur of, Don't move a muscle, then walked quickly to his mother's side. Have I told you lately? He whispered in her ear, how much I love you.
No, she said with a jaunty smile, but I know anyway.
Have I mentioned that you're the best of mothers?
No, but I know that too.
Good.
He leaned down and dropped a kiss on her cheek.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be your son.
His mother, who had held her own throughout the day, and indeed proven herself the most hard-headed and quick-witted of them all, burst into tears.
What did you say to her?
Sophie demanded.
It's all right,
Violet said, sniffing mightily. It's... She threw her arms around Benedict.
I love you too.
Posy turned to Sophie and said,
This is a nice family.
Sophie turned to Posy and said,
I know.
1 hour later, Sophie was in Benedict's sitting room, perched on the very same sofa on which she had lost her innocence just a few weeks earlier. Lady Bridgerton had questioned the wisdom and propriety of Sophie's going to Benedict's home by herself, but he had given her such a look that she had quickly backed down, saying only, Just have her home by 7, which gave them 1 hour together.
I'm sorry,
Sophie blurted out, the instant her bottom touched the sofa. For some reason, they hadn't said anything during the carriage ride home. They'd held hands, and Benedict had brought her fingers to his lips, but they hadn't said anything. Sophie had been relieved. She hadn't been ready for words. It had been easy at the jail, with all the commotion and so many people, but now that they were alone, she didn't know what to say. Except, she supposed,
I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry, Benedict replied, sitting beside her and taking her hands in his.
No, I'm... She suddenly smiled. This is very silly.
I love you, he said. Her lips parted. I want to marry you, he said. She stopped breathing. And I don't care about your parents or my mother's bargain with Lady Penwood to make you respectable. He stared down at her, his dark eyes meltingly in love. I would have married you no matter what. Sophie blinked. The tears in her eyes were growing fat and hot, and she had a sneaking suspicion that she was about to make a fool of herself by blubbering all over him. She managed to say his name, then found herself completely lost from there. Benedict squeezed her hands.
We couldn't have lived in London, I know, but we don't need to live in London. When I thought about what it was in life I really needed, not what I wanted, but what I needed, the only thing that kept coming up was you. No, let me finish, he said, his voice suspiciously hoarse. I shouldn't have asked you to be my mistress. It wasn't right of me.
Benedict, she said softly, what else would you have done? You thought me a servant. In a perfect world we could have married. But this isn't a perfect world. Men like you don't marry.
Fine. I wasn't wrong to ask then.
He tried to smile. It came out lopsided.
I would have been a fool not to ask. I wanted you so badly. And I think I already loved you and...
Benedict, you don't have to...
Explain. Yes, I do. I should never have pressed the issue once you refused my offer. It was unfair of me to ask, especially when we both knew that I would eventually be expected to marry. I would die before sharing you. How could I ask you to do the same?
She reached out and brushed something off of his cheek.
Jesus, was he crying? He couldn't remember the last time he'd cried. When his father had died, perhaps.
Even then, his tears had fallen in private.
There are so many reasons I love you, he said, each word emerging with careful precision.
He knew that he had won her. She wasn't going to run away. She would be his wife. But he still wanted this to be perfect. A man only got one shot at declaring himself to his true love. He didn't want to muck it up completely.
But one of the things I love best, he continued, is the fact that you know yourself. You know who you are and what you value. You have principles, Sophie, and you stick by them.
He took her hand and brought it to his lips.
That is so rare.
Her eyes were filling with tears, and all he wanted to do was hold her. But he knew he had to finish. So many words had been welling up inside of him, and they all had to be said.
And, he said, his voice dropping in volume, you took the time to see me, to know me, Benedict, not Mr. Bridgerton, not number two, Benedict.
She touched his cheek.
You're the finest person I know. I adore your family, but I love you.
He crushed her to him. He couldn't help it. He had to feel her in his arms, to reassure himself that she was there and that she would always be there, with him, by his side, until death did they part. It was strange, but he was driven by the oddest compulsion to hold her. Just... hold her. He wanted her, of course. He always wanted her. But more than that, he wanted to hold her, to smell her, to feel her. He was, he realized, comforted by her presence. They didn't need to talk. They didn't even need to touch, although he wasn't about to let go just then. Simply put, he was a happier man, and quite possibly a better man, when she was near. He buried his face in her hair, inhaling her scent, smelling. He drew back.
Would you care for a bath?
Her face turned an instant scarlet.
Oh, no,
she moaned, the words muffled into the hand she'd clapped over her mouth.
It was so filthy in jail, and I was forced to sleep on the ground and...
Don't tell me any more, he said.
But please!
If he heard more, he might have to kill someone. As long as there had been no permanent damage, he didn't want to know the details. I think, he said, the first hint of a smile tugging at the left corner of his mouth, that you should take a bath.
Right.
She nodded as she rose to her feet.
I'll go straight to your mother's.
Here?
Here?
The smile spread to the right corner of his mouth.
Here.
But we told your mother...
That you'd be home by 9.
I think she said 7.
Did she? Funny. I heard 9.
Benedict?
He took her hand and pulled her toward the door.
7 sounds an awful lot like 9.
Benedict?
Actually, it sounds even more like 11.
Benedict!
He deposited her right by the door.
Stay here.
I beg your pardon?
Don't move a muscle, he said, touching his fingertip to her nose.
Sophie watched helplessly as he slipped out into the hall, only to return 2 minutes later.
Where did you go?
She asked.
To order a bath.
But...
His eyes grew very, very wicked.
For 2.
She gulped. He leaned forward.
They happened to have water heating already.
They did?
He nodded.
It'll only take a few minutes to fill the tub.
She glanced toward the front door.
It's nearly 7.
But I'm allowed to keep you until 12.
Benedict.
He pulled her close.
You want to stay?
I never said that.
You don't have to. If you really disagreed with me, you'd have something more to say than Benedict.
She had to smile. He did that good an imitation of her voice. His mouth curved into a devilish grin.
Am I wrong?
She looked away, but she knew her lips were twitching.
I thought not,
he murmured. He motioned with his head toward the stairs.
Come with me.
She went. To Sophie's great surprise, Benedict vacated the room while she undressed for her bath. She held her breath as she pulled her dress over her head. He was right. She did smell rank. The maid who had drawn the bath had scented it with oil and a sudsy soap that left bubbles floating on the surface. Once Sophie had shed all of her clothing, she dipped her toe into the steaming water. The rest of her soon followed.
Heaven!
It was hard to believe it had only been 2 days since she'd had a bath. One night in jail made it feel more like a year. Sophie tried to clear her mind and enjoy the hedonism of the moment, but it was difficult to enjoy with the anticipation growing within her veins. She knew when she'd decided to stay that Benedict planned on joining her. She could have refused. For all his wheedling and cajoling, he would have taken her back home to his mother's. But she had decided to stay. Somewhere between the sitting room doorway and the base of the stairs, she'd realized she wanted to stay. It had been such a long road to this moment, and she wasn't quite ready to relinquish him, even if it would only be until the following morning, when he was sure to come by his mother's for breakfast. He would be here soon, and when he was... She shivered. Even in the steaming hot tub, she shivered. And then... As she was sinking deeper into the water, allowing it to rise above her shoulders and neck, even right up to her nose, she heard the click of the door opening. Benedict. He was wearing a dark green dressing gown, tied with a sash at his waist. His feet were bare, as were his legs from the knees down.
I hope you don't mind if I have this destroyed, he said,
glancing down at her dress. She smiled at him and shook her head. It wasn't what she'd been expecting him to say, and she knew that he'd done it to set her at ease.
I'll send someone to fetch you another, he said.
Thank you.
She shifted slightly in the water to make room for him, but he surprised her by walking to her end of the tub.
Lean forward,
he murmured. She did, and sighed with pleasure as he began to wash her back. "I've dreamed of doing this for years."
"Years?"
she asked, amused. "Mm-hmm. I had many dreams about you after the masquerade."
Sophie was glad she was leaning forward, her forehead resting on her bent knees, because she blushed.
"Dunk your head so I can wash your hair,"
he ordered. She slid under the water, then quickly came back up.
Benedict rubbed the bar of soap in his hands and then began to work the lather through her hair. "It was longer before," he commented.
"I had to cut it," she said. "I sold it to a wig maker."
She wasn't sure, but she thought she might have heard him growl.
"It used to be much shorter," she added.
"Ready to rinse?"
She dunked back in the tub, swishing her head this way and that under the water before coming back up for air. Benedict cupped his hands and filled them with water.
"You've still got some in the back," he said,
letting the water pour over her hair. Sophie let him repeat that process a few times, then finally asked, "Aren't you coming in?" It was dreadfully brazen of her, and she knew she must be blushing like a raspberry, but she simply had to know. He shook his head.
"I'd planned to, but this is too much fun."
"Washing me?" she asked doubtfully. One corner of his mouth quirked into the faintest of half smiles.
"I'm rather looking forward to drying you off as well."
He reached down and picked up a large white towel.
"Up you go."
Sophie chewed on her lower lip in indecision. She had, of course, already been as close to him as two people could be, but she wasn't so sophisticated that she could rise naked from the tub without a large degree of embarrassment. Benedict smiled faintly as he stood and unfolded the towel. Holding it wide, he averted his gaze and said,
"I'll have you all wrapped up before I can see a thing."
Sophie took a deep breath and stood, somehow feeling that that one action might mark the beginning of the rest of her life. Benedict gently wrapped the towel around her, his hands bringing the corners to her face when he was done. He dabbed at her cheeks, where light droplets of water were still clinging to her skin, then leaned down and kissed her nose.
"I'm glad you're here," he murmured.
"I'm glad too." He touched her chin. His eyes never left hers, and she almost felt as if he'd touched those as well. And then, with the softest, most tender caress imaginable, he kissed her. Sophie didn't just feel loved, she felt revered.
"I should wait until Monday," he said, "but I don't want to."
"I don't want you to wait," she whispered. He kissed her again, this time with a bit more urgency.
"You're so beautiful," he murmured. "Everything I ever dreamed of."
His lips found her cheek, her chin, her neck, and every kiss, every nibble robbed her of balance and breath. She was sure her legs would give out, sure her strength would fail her under his tender onslaught, and just when she was convinced she'd crumple to the floor, he scooped her into his arms and carried her to the bed.
"In my heart,"
he vowed, settling her against the quilts and pillows.
"You are my wife."
Sophie's breath caught.
"After our wedding, it will be legal,"
he said, stretching out alongside her.
"Blessed by God and country. But right now..."
His voice grew hoarse as he propped himself up on one elbow so that he could gaze into her eyes.
"Right now, it is true."
Sophie reached up and touched his face.
"I love you,"
she whispered.
"I have always loved you. I think I loved you before I even knew you."
He leaned down to kiss her anew, but she stopped him with a breathy,
"No, wait."
He paused, mere inches from her lips.
"At the masquerade,"
she said, her voice uncharacteristically shaky.
"Even before I saw you, I felt you. Anticipation. Magic. There was something in the air. And when I turned and you were there, it was as if you'd been waiting for me. And I knew that you were the reason I'd stolen into the ball."
Something wet hit her cheek.
a single tear fallen from his eye.
"You are the reason I exist,"
she said softly.
"The very reason I was born."
He opened his mouth, and for a moment she was certain he would say something. But the only sound that emerged was a rough, halting noise, and she realized that he was overcome, that he could not speak. She was undone. Benedict kissed her again, trying to show in deeds what he could not say in words. He hadn't thought he could love her any more than he did just 5 seconds earlier, but when she'd told him, his heart had grown, and he'd thought it might burst. He loved her. Suddenly, the world was a very simple place. He loved her, and that was all that mattered. His robe and her towel melted away, and when they were skin to skin, he worshipped her with his hands and lips. He wanted her to realize the extent of his need for her, and he wanted her to know the same desire.
"Oh, Sophie,"
he groaned, her name the only word he could manage to say.
"Sophie, Sophie, Sophie."
She smiled up at him, and he was struck by the most remarkable desire to laugh. He was happy, he realized. So damned happy. And it felt good. He positioned himself over her, ready to enter her, ready to make her his. This was different from the last time, when they'd both been swept away by emotion. This time they had been deliberate. They had chosen more than passion. They had chosen each other.
"You're mine,"
he said, his eyes never leaving hers as he slid inside.
"You're mine."
And much later, when they were exhausted and spent, lying in each other's arms, he brought his lips to her ear and whispered,
"And I'm yours."
Several hours later, Sophie yawned and blinked herself awake, wondering why she felt so lovely and warm, and,
"Benedict,"
she gasped,
"what time is it?"
He didn't respond, so she clutched at his shoulder and shook hard.
"Benedict! Benedict!"
He grunted as he rolled over.
"I'm sleeping."
"What time is it?"
He buried his face in the pillow.
"Haven't the foggiest."
"I'm supposed to be at your mother's by 7.
11,
he mumbled.
7.
He opened one eye. It looked like it took a great deal of effort.
"You knew you weren't going to make it back by 7 when you decided to take a bath."
"I know, but I didn't think I'd be much past 9.
Benedict blinked a few times as he looked around the room.
"I don't think you're going to make it."
But she'd already caught sight of the mantel clock and was presently choking frantically.
"Are you all right?"
he inquired.
"It's 3 in the morning."
He smiled.
"You might as well spend the night then."
"Benedict."
"You wouldn't want to put out any of the servants, would you? They're all quite asleep, I'm sure."
"But I..."
"Have mercy, woman,"
he finally declared. "I'm marrying you next week." That got her attention.
"Next week?"
she squeaked. He tried to assume a serious mien.
"It's best to take care of these things quickly."
"Why?"
"Why?" he echoed.
"Yes, why?"
Stemming gossip and all that."
Her lips parted and her eyes grew round.
"Do you think Lady Whistledown will write about me?"
"God, I hope not,"
he muttered. Her face fell.
"Well, I suppose she might. Why on earth would you want her to?"
"I've been reading her column for years. I always dreamed of seeing my name there."
He shook his head.
"You have very strange dreams."
"Benedict."
"Very well, yes. I imagine Lady Whistledown will report our marriage. If not before the ceremony, then certainly very quickly after the fact. She's diabolical that way."
"I wish I knew who she was."
"You and half of London."
"Me and all of London, I should think."
She sighed, then said, not very convincingly,
"I really should go. Your mother is surely worried about me."
He shrugged.
She knows where you are.
But she'll think less of me.
I doubt it. She'll give you a bit of latitude, I'm sure, considering we're to be married in 3 days.
3 days?
She yelped.
I thought you said next week.
3 days is next week. So he frowned.
Oh, you're right. Monday, then?
He nodded, looking very satisfied.
Imagine that,
she said.
I'll be in Whistledown.
He propped himself up on one elbow, eyeing her suspiciously. Are you looking forward to marrying me? He asked in an amused voice. Or is it merely the Whistledown mention that has you so excited? She gave him a playful swat on the shoulder. Actually, he said thoughtfully, you've already been in Whistledown.
I have. When?
After the masquerade. Lady Whistledown remarked that I'd been rather taken with a mystery woman in silver. Try as she might, she couldn't deduce your identity. He grinned. It very well may be the only secret in London she hasn't uncovered. Sophie's face went instantly serious, and she scooted a foot or so away from him on the bed.
Oh, Benedict, I have to... I want to... That is to say...
She stopped, looking away for a few seconds before turning back.
I'm sorry.
He considered yanking her back into his arms, but she looked so damned earnest, he had no choice but to take her seriously. What for?
For not telling you who I was. It was wrong of me.
She bit her lip.
Well, not wrong, precisely.
He drew back slightly. If it wasn't wrong, then what was it?
I don't know. I can't explain exactly why I did what I did. But it just...
She chewed on her lips some more. He started to think that she might do herself permanent harm. She sighed.
I didn't tell you right away because it didn't seem to make any sense to do so. I was so sure we'd part ways just as soon as we left the Cavenders. But then you grew ill, and I had to care for you. And you didn't recognize me, and...
He lifted a finger to her lips. It doesn't matter. Her brows rose.
It seemed to matter a great deal the other night.
He didn't know why, but he just didn't want to get into a serious discussion at that moment. A lot has changed since then.
Don't you want to know why I didn't tell you who I was?
He touched her cheeks. I know who you are. She chewed on her lip. And do you want to hear the funniest part? He continued. Do you know one of the reasons I was so hesitant to give my heart completely to you? I'd been saving a piece of it for the lady from the masquerade, always hoping that one day I'd find her.
Oh, Benedict,
she sighed, thrilled by his words, and at the same time miserable that she had hurt him so. Deciding to marry you meant I had to abandon my dream of marrying her, he said quietly. Ironic, isn't it?
I'm sorry I hurt you by not revealing my identity,
she said, not quite looking at his face.
But I'm not sure that I'm sorry I did it. Does that make any sense?
He didn't say anything.
I think I would do the same thing again.
He still didn't say anything. Sophie started to feel very uneasy inside.
It just seemed like the right thing to do at the time, she persisted. Telling you that I'd been at the masquerade would have served no purpose.
I would have known the truth, he said softly.
Yes, and what would you have done with that truth?
She sat up, pulling the covers until they were tucked under her arms.
You would have wanted your mystery woman to be your mistress, just as you wanted the housemaid to be your mistress.
He said nothing, just stared at her face.
I guess what I'm saying,
Sophie said quickly,
is that if I'd known at the beginning what I know now, I would have said something. But I didn't know, and I thought I'd just be positioning myself for heartbreak. And
she choked on her final words, frantically searching his face for some kind of clue to his feelings.
Please say something.
I love you, he said. It was all she needed.
Epilogue.
Sunday's bash at Bridgerton House is sure to be the event of the season. The entire family will gather, along with 100 or so of their closest friends, to celebrate the Dowager Viscountess's birthday. It is considered crass to mention a lady's age, and so this author will not reveal which birthday Lady Bridgerton is celebrating. But have no fear, this author knows.
Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 9th of April, 1824.
Stop! Stop!
Sophie shrieked with laughter as she ran down the stone steps that led to the garden behind Bridgerton House. After 3 children and 7 years of marriage, Benedict could still make her smile, still make her laugh, and he still chased her around the house any chance he could get.
"Where are the children?"
she gasped, once he'd caught her at the base of the steps.
"Francesca is watching them."
"And your mother?"
He grinned.
"I dare say Francesca is watching her, too."
"Anyone could stumble upon us out here,"
she said, looking this way and that. His smile turned wicked.
"Maybe," he said,
catching hold of her green velvet skirt and reeling her in.
"We should adjourn to the private terrace."
The words were oh so familiar, and it was only a second before she was transported back 9 years to the masquerade ball.
"The private terrace, you say?"
she asked, amusement dancing in her eyes.
"And how, pray tell, would you know of a private terrace?"
His lips brushed against hers.
"I have my ways," he murmured.
"And I,"
she returned, smiling slyly,
"have my secrets."
He drew back.
"Oh? And will you share?"
"We 5, she said with a nod, "are about to be 6.
He looked at her face, then looked at her belly.
"Are you sure?"
"As sure as I was last time."
He took her hand and raised it to his lips.
"This one will be a girl."
"That's what you said last time."
"I know, but..."
"And the time before."
"All the more reason for the odds to favour me this time."
She shook her head.
"I'm glad you're not a gambler."
He smiled at that.
"Let's not tell anyone yet."
"I think a few people already suspect,"
Sophie admitted.
"I want to see how long it takes that Whistledown woman to figure it out," Benedict said.
"Are you serious?"
"The blasted woman knew about Charles, and she knew about Alexander, and she knew about William."
Sophie smiled as she let him pull her into the shadows.
"Do you realise that I have been mentioned in Whistledown 232 times?
That stopped him cold.
"You've been counting?"
233, if you include the time after the masquerade.
"I can't believe you've been counting."
She gave him a nonchalant shrug.
"It's exciting to be mentioned."
Benedict thought it was a bloody nuisance to be mentioned, but he wasn't about to spoil her delight. So instead he just said,
"At least she always writes nice things about you. If she didn't, I might have to hunt her down and run her out of the country."
Sophie couldn't help but smile.
"Oh, please. I hardly think you could discover her identity when no one else in the ton has managed it."
He raised one arrogant brow.
"That doesn't sound like wifely devotion and confidence to me."
She pretended to examine her glove.
"You needn't expend the energy. She's obviously very good at what she does."
"Well, she won't know about Violet,"
Benedict vowed.
"At least not until it's obvious to the world."
"Violet?"
Sophie asked softly.
"It's time my mother had a grandchild named after her, don't you think?"
Sophie leaned against him, letting her cheek rest against the crisp linen of his shirt.
"I think Violet is a lovely name," she murmured, nestling deeper into the shelter of his arms. "I just hope it's a girl, because if it's a boy, he's never going to forgive us."
Later that night, in a townhouse in the very best part of London, a woman picked up her quill and wrote. Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 12th of April, 1824.
Ah, gentle reader,
This author has learned that the Bridgerton grandchildren will soon number 11. But when she tried to write more, all she could do was close her eyes and sigh. She'd been doing this for so very long now. Could it have possibly been 11 years already? Maybe it was time to move on. She was tired of writing about everyone else. It was time to live her own life. And so Lady Whistledown set down her quill and walked to her window, pushing aside her sage green curtains and looking out into the inky night. "Time for something new," she whispered. "Time to finally be me." Dear reader, have you ever wondered what happened to your favourite characters after you closed the final page? Wanted just a little bit more of a favourite novel? I have, and if the questions from my readers are any indication, I'm not the only one. So, after countless requests from Bridgerton fans, I decided to try something a little different, and I wrote a second epilogue for each of the novels. These are the stories that come after the stories. At first, the Bridgerton second epilogues were available exclusively online. Later, they were published, along with a novella about Violet Bridgerton, in a collection called The Bridgertons, Happily Ever After. Now, for the first time, each second epilogue is being included with the novel it follows. I hope you enjoy Benedict and Sophie as they continue their journey. An Offer from a Gentleman, the second epilogue. At 25, Miss Posy Riling was considered nearly a spinster. There were those who might have considered her past the cut-off from young miss to hopeless ape leader. 23 was often cited as the unkind chronological border. But Posy was, as Lady Bridgerton, her unofficial guardian, often remarked, a unique case. In debutante years, Lady Bridgerton insisted, Posy was only 20, maybe 21. Eloise Bridgerton, the eldest unmarried daughter of the house, put it a little more bluntly. Posy's first few years out in society had been worthless and should not be counted against her. Eloise's youngest sister, Hyacinth, never one to be verbally outdone, simply stated that Posy's years between the ages of 17 and 22 had been utter rot. It was at this point that Lady Bridgerton had sighed, poured herself a stiff drink, and sunk into a chair. Eloise, whose mouth was as sharp as Hyacinth's, though thankfully tempered by some discretion, had remarked that they had best get Hyacinth married off quickly, or their mother was going to become an alcoholic. Lady Bridgerton had not appreciated the comment, although she privately thought it might be true. Hyacinth was like that. But this is a story about Posy. And as Hyacinth has a tendency to take over anything in which she is involved, please do forget about her for the remainder of the tale. The truth was, Posy's first few years on the marriage mart had been utter rot. It was true that she'd made her debut at a proper age of 17, and, indeed, she was the stepdaughter of the late Earl of Penwood, who had so prudently made arrangements for her dowry before his untimely death several years prior. She was perfectly pleasant to look at, if perhaps a little plump. She had all of her teeth, and it had been remarked upon more than once that she had uncommonly kind eyes. Anyone assessing her on paper would not understand why she'd gone so long without even a single proposal. But anyone assessing her on paper might not have known about Posy's mother, Araminta Gunningworth, the Dowager Countess of Penwood. Araminta was splendidly beautiful, even more so than Posy's elder sister, Rosamond, who had been blessed with fair hair, a rosebud mouth, and eyes of blue. Araminta was ambitious, too, and enormously proud of her ascension from the gentry to the aristocracy. She'd gone from Miss Winchesley to Mrs. Riling to Lady Penwood, although, to hear her speak of it, her mouth had been dripping silver spoons since the day of her birth. But Araminta had failed in one regard. She had not been able to provide the Earl with an heir, which meant that despite the lady before her name, she did not wield a terribly large amount of power, nor did she have access to the type of fortune she felt was her due. And so she pinned her hopes on Rosamond. Rosamond, she was sure, would make a splendid match. Rosamond was achingly beautiful. Rosamond could sing and play the piano forte, and if she wasn't talented with a needle, then she knew exactly how to poke Posy, who was. And since Posy did not enjoy repeated needle-sized skin punctures, it was Rosamond's embroidery that always looked exquisite. Posy's, on the other hand, generally went unfinished. And since money was not as plentiful as Araminta would have her peers believe, she lavished what they had on Rosamond's wardrobe, and Rosamond's lessons, and Rosamond's everything. She wasn't about to let Posy look embarrassingly shabby, but really, there was no point in spending more than she had to on her. You couldn't turn a sow's ear into a silk purse, and you certainly couldn't turn a Posy into a Rosamond. But, and this is a rather large but, things didn't turn out so well for Araminta. It's a terribly long story, and one probably deserving of a book of its own. But suffice it to say that Araminta cheated another young girl of her inheritance, one Sophia Beckett, who happened to be the Earl's illegitimate daughter. She would have got away with it completely, because who cares about a bastard, except that Sophie had had the temerity to fall in love with Benedict Bridgerton, second son in the aforementioned and extremely well-connected Bridgerton family. This would not have been enough to seal Araminta's fate, except that Benedict decided he loved Sophie back, quite madly, and while he might have overlooked embezzlement, he certainly could not do the same for having Sophie hauled off to jail on mostly fraudulent charges. Things were looking grim for dear Sophie. Even with intervention on the part of Benedict and his mother, the also aforementioned Lady Bridgerton. But then, who should show up to save the day but Posy? Posy, who had been ignored for most of her life. Posy, who had spent years feeling guilty for not standing up to her mother. Posy, who was still a little bit plump and never would be as beautiful as her sister, but who would always have the kindest eyes. Araminta had disowned her on the spot, but before Posy had even a moment to wonder if this constituted good or bad fortune, Lady Bridgerton had invited her to live in her home for as long as she wished. Posy might have spent 22 years being poked and pricked by her sister, but she was no fool. She accepted gladly, and did not even bother to return home to collect her belongings. As for Araminta, well, she'd quickly ascertained that it was in her best interest not to make any public comment about the soon-to-be Sophia Bridgerton, unless it was to declare her an absolute joy and delight, which she didn't do. But she didn't go around calling her a bastard either, which was all anyone could have expected. All of this explains, in an admittedly roundabout way, why Lady Bridgerton was Posy's unofficial guardian, and why she considered her a unique case. To her mind, Posy had not truly debuted until she came to live with her. Penwood dowry or no, who on earth would have looked twice at a girl in ill-fitting clothes, always stuck off in the corner, trying her best not to be noticed by her own mother? And if she was still unmarried at 25, why, that was certainly equal to a mere 20 for anyone else, or so Lady Bridgerton said, and no one really wanted to contradict her. As for Posy, she often said that her life had not really begun until she went to jail. This tended to require some explaining, but most of Posy's statements did. Posy didn't mind. The Bridgertons actually liked her explanations. They liked her. Even better, she rather liked herself, which was more important than she'd ever realised. Sophie Bridgerton considered her life to be almost perfect. She adored her husband, loved her cosy home, and was quite certain that her two little boys were the most handsome, brilliant creatures ever to be born anywhere, any time, any, well, any one could come up with. It was true that they had to live in the country, because even with the sizable influence of the Bridgerton family, Sophie was, on account of her birth, not likely to be accepted by some of the more particular London hostesses. Sophie called them particular. Benedict called them something else entirely. But that didn't matter. Not really. She and Benedict preferred life in the country, so it was no great loss. And even though it would always be whispered that Sophie's birth was not what it should be, the official story was that she was a distant and completely legitimate relative of the late Earl of Penwood. And even though no one really believed Araminta when she'd confirmed the story, confirmed it she had. Sophie knew that by the time her children were grown, the rumours would be old enough so that no doors would be closed to them, should they wish to take their spots in London society. All was well. All was perfect. Almost. Really, all she needed to do was find a husband for Posy. Not just any husband, of course. Posy deserved the best. "She is not for everyone," Sophie had admitted to Benedict the previous day. "But that does not mean she is not a brilliant catch."
"Of course not," he murmured.
He was trying to read the newspaper. It was 3 days old, but to his mind it was all still news to him. She looked at him sharply.
"I mean, of course," he said quickly.
And then, when she did not immediately carry on, he amended,
"I mean, whichever one means that she will make someone a splendid wife."
Sophie let out a sigh.
"The problem is that most people don't seem to realise how lovely she is."
Benedict gave a dutiful nod. He understood his role in this particular tableau. It was the sort of conversation that wasn't really a conversation. Sophie was thinking aloud, and he was there to provide the occasional verbal prompt or gesture.
"Or at least that's what your mother reports," Sophie continued.
"Mm-hmm.
She doesn't get asked to dance nearly as often as she ought."
"Men are beasts,"
Benedict agreed, flipping to the next page.
"It's true," Sophie said with some emotion. "Present company excluded, of course."
"Oh, of course."
"Most of the time," she added,
a little waspishly.
He gave her a wave. "Think nothing of it."
"Are you listening to me?"
she asked, her eyes narrowing.
"Every word," he assured her,
actually lowering the paper enough to see her above the top edge. He hadn't actually seen her eyes narrow, but he knew her well enough to hear it in her voice.
"We need to find a husband for Posy."
He considered that.
"Perhaps she doesn't want one."
"Of course she wants one."
"I have been told," Benedict opined, "that every woman wants a husband. But in my experience, this is not precisely true."
Sophie just stared at him, which she did not find surprising. It was a fairly lengthy statement, coming from a man with a newspaper.
"Consider Eloise," he said.
He shook his head, which was his usual inclination while thinking of his sister.
"How many men has she refused now?"
"At least 3,
Sophie said.
"But that's not the point."
"What is the point, then?"
"Posy."
"Right," he said slowly.
Sophie leaned forward, her eyes taking on an odd mix of bewilderment and determination.
"I don't know why the gentlemen don't see how wonderful she is."
"She's an acquired taste," Benedict said, momentarily forgetting that he wasn't supposed to offer a real opinion.
"What?"
"You said she's not for everyone."
"But you're not supposed to..."
She slumped a bit in her seat.
"Never mind."
"What were you going to say?"
"Nothing."
"Sophie," he prodded.
"Just that you weren't supposed to agree with me,"
she muttered.
"But even I can recognise how ridiculous that is."
It was a splendid thing, Benedict had long since realized, to have a sensible wife. Sophie didn't speak for some time, and Benedict would have resumed his perusal of the newspaper, except that it was too interesting watching her face. She'd chew on her lip, then let out a weary sigh, then straighten a bit, as if she'd got a good thought, then frown. Really, he could have watched her all afternoon.
Can you think of anyone?
She suddenly asked.
For Posy?
She gave him a look. Whom else might I be speaking of? Look. He let out a breath. He should have anticipated the question, but he'd begun to think of the painting he was working on in his studio. It was a portrait of Sophie, the fourth he'd done in their 3 years of marriage. He was beginning to think that he'd not got her mouth quite right. It wasn't the lips so much as the corners of her mouth. A good portraitist needed to understand the muscles of the human body, even those on the face, and...
Benedict!
What about Mr. Folsom?
He said quickly.
The solicitor?
He nodded.
He looks shifty.
She was right, he realised, now that he thought on it.
Sir Reginald?
Sophie gave him another look, visibly disappointed with his selection.
He's fat.
So is...
She is not,
Sophie cut in.
She is pleasantly plump.
I was going to say that so is Mr. Folsom,
Benedict said, feeling the need to defend himself.
But that you had chosen to comment upon his shiftiness.
Oh.
He allowed himself the smallest of smiles.
Shiftiness is far worse than excess weight,
she mumbled.
I could not agree more,
Benedict said. What about Mr. Woodson?
Who?
The new vicar. The one you said...
Has a brilliant smile,
Sophie finished excitedly.
Oh, Benedict, that's perfect. Oh, I love you, love you, love you.
At that, she practically leapt across the low table between them and into his arms.
Well, I love you too,
he said, and he congratulated himself on having had the foresight to shut the door to the drawing room earlier. The newspaper flew over his shoulder, and all was right with the world. The season drew to a close a few weeks later, and so Posy decided to accept Sophie's invitation for an extended visit. London was hot and sticky, and rather smelly in the summer, and a sojourn in the country seemed just the thing. Besides, she had not seen either of her godsons in several months, and she had been aghast when Sophie had written to say that Alexander had already begun to lose some of his baby fat.
Oh, he was just the most squeezable, adorable thing.
She had to go see him before he grew too thin. She simply had to. And it would be nice to see Sophie too. She'd written that she was still feeling a bit weak, and Posy did like to be a help. A few days into the visit, she and Sophie were taking tea, and talk turned, as it occasionally did, to Araminta and Rosamond, whom Posy occasionally bumped into in London. After over a year of silence, her mother finally had begun to acknowledge her. But even so, conversation was brief and stilted, which, Posy had decided, was for the best. Her mother might have had nothing to say to her, but she didn't have anything to say to her mother either. As far as epiphanies went, it had been rather liberating.
I saw her outside the milliner,
Posy said, fixing her tea just the way she liked it, with extra milk and no sugar.
She'd just come down the steps, and I couldn't avoid her, and then I realised I didn't want to avoid her. Not that I wished to speak with her, of course.
She took a sip.
Rather, I didn't wish to expend the energy needed to hide.
Sophie nodded approvingly.
And then we spoke, and said nothing really, although she did manage to get in one of her clever little insults. I hate that. I know. She's so good at it.
It's a talent, Sophie remarked. Not a good one, but a talent nonetheless.
Well, Posy continued, I must say, I was rather mature about the entire encounter. I let her say what she wished, and then I bid her goodbye. And then I had the most amazing realization. What is that?
Posy gave a smile.
I like myself. Well, of course you do,
Sophie said, blinking with confusion.
No, you don't understand,
Posy said. It was strange, because Sophie ought to have understood perfectly. She was the only person in the world who knew what it meant to live as Araminta's unfavoured child. But there was something so sunny about Sophie. There always had been. Even when Araminta treated her as a virtual slave, Sophie had never seemed beaten. There had always been a singular spirit to her, a sparkle. It wasn't defiance. Sophie was the least defiant person Posy knew, except perhaps for herself. Not defiance, resilience. Yes, that was it exactly. At any rate, Sophie ought to have understood what Posy had meant, but she didn't. So Posy said,
I didn't always like myself, and why should I have done? My own mother didn't like me.
Oh, Posy, Sophie said, her eyes brimming with tears.
You mustn't.
No,
Posy said good-naturedly.
Don't think anything of it. It doesn't bother me.
Sophie just looked at her.
Well, not any more,
Posy amended. She eyed the plate of biscuits sitting on the table between them. She really oughtn't to eat one. She'd had three, and she wanted three more. So maybe that meant that if she had one, she was really abstaining from two. She twiddled her fingers against her leg. Probably she shouldn't have one. Probably she should leave them for Sophie, who had just had a baby and needed to regain her strength. Although Sophie did look perfectly recovered, and little Alexander was already 4 months old.
Posy,
she looked up.
Is something amiss?
Posy gave a little shrug.
I can't decide whether I wish to eat a biscuit.
Sophie blinked.
A biscuit? Really? There are at least two reasons why I should not, and probably more than that.
She paused, frowning.
You looked quite serious,
Sophie remarked.
Almost as if you were conjugating Latin. Oh, no. I should look far more at peace if I were conjugating Latin,
Posy declared.
That would be quite simple, as I know nothing about it. Biscuits, on the other hand, I ponder endlessly.
She sighed and looked down at her middle.
Much to my dismay. Don't be silly, Posy,
Sophie scolded.
You are the loveliest woman of my acquaintance.
Posy smiled and took the biscuit. The marvellous thing about Sophie was that she wasn't lying. Sophie really did think her the loveliest woman of her acquaintance. But then again, Sophie had always been that sort of person. She saw kindness where others saw, well, where others didn't even bother to look, to be frank. Posy took a bite and chewed, deciding that it was absolutely worth it. Butter, sugar and flour. What could be better?
I received a letter from Lady Bridgerton today,
Sophie remarked. Posy looked up in interest. Technically, Lady Bridgerton could mean Sophie's sister-in-law, the wife of the current Viscount. But they both knew she referred to Benedict's mother. To them, she would always be Lady Bridgerton. The other one was Kate, which was just as well, as that was Kate's preference within the family.
She said that Mr. Fibberley called.
When Posy did not comment, Sophie added,
He was looking for you. Well, of course he was,
Posy said, deciding to have that fourth biscuit after all.
Hyacinth is too young, and Eloise terrifies him.
Eloise terrifies me, Sophie admitted.
Or at least she used to. Hyacinth, I'm quite sure, will terrify me to the grave. You just need to know how to manage her,
Posy said with a wave. It was true. Hyacinth Bridgerton was terrifying, but the two of them had always got on quite well. It was probably due to Hyacinth's firm, some might say unyielding, sense of justice. When she'd found out that Posy's mother had never loved her as well as Rosamond, well, Posy had never told tales, and she wasn't going to begin now. but let it be said that Araminta had never again eaten fish or chicken. Posy had got this from the servants, and they always had the most accurate gossip.
"But you were about to tell me about Mr. Fibberley,"
Sophie said, still sipping at her tea. Posy shrugged, even though she hadn't been about to do any such thing.
"He's so dull."
"Handsome?" Posy shrugged again.
"I can't tell.
One generally need only look at the face.
I can't get past his dullness. I don't think he laughs."
"It can't be that bad."
"Oh, it can, I assure you."
She reached out and took another biscuit before she realised she hadn't meant to. Oh, well, it was already in her hand now. She couldn't very well put it back. She waved it in the air as she spoke, trying to make her point.
"He sometimes makes this dreadful noise like, ahem, and I think he thinks he's laughing, but he's clearly not."
Sophie giggled, even though she looked as if she thought she shouldn't.
"And he doesn't even look at my bosom. Posy, it's my only good feature."
"It is not." Sophie glanced about the drawing room, even though there was precisely no one about.
"I can't believe you said that."
Posy let out a frustrated exhale.
"I can't say bosom in London, and now I can't do so in Wiltshire either. Not when I'm expecting the new vicar,"
Sophie said. A chunk of Posy's biscuit fell off and fell into her lap.
"What? I didn't tell you."
Posy eyed her suspiciously. Most people thought Sophie was a poor liar, but that was only because she had such an angelic look about her, and she rarely lied. So everyone assumed that if she did, she'd be dreadful at it. Posy, however, knew better.
"No,"
she said, brushing off her skirts.
"You did not tell me. How very unlike me,"
Sophie murmured. She picked up a biscuit and took a bite. Posy stared at her.
"Do you know what I'm not doing now?"
Sophie shook her head.
"I am not rolling my eyes, because I am trying to act in a fashion that befits my age and maturity."
"You do look very grave." Posy stared her down a bit more.
"He is unmarried, I assume?"
Yes. Posy lifted her left brow, the arch expression possibly the only useful gift she'd received from her mother.
"How old is this vicar?"
"I do not know," Sophie admitted. "But he has all of his hair."
"And it has come to this,"
Posy murmured.
"I thought of you when I met him,"
Sophie said.
"Because he smiles."
"Because he smiled?" Posy was beginning to think that Sophie was a bit cracked.
"I beg your pardon? He smiles so often, and so well."
At that, Sophie smiled.
"I couldn't help but think of you."
Posy did roll her eyes this time, then followed it with an immediate,
"I have decided to forsake maturity."
"By all means."
"I shall meet your vicar,"
Posy said.
"But you should know I have decided to aspire to eccentricity."
"I wish you the best with that," Sophie said, not without sarcasm.
"You don't think I can? You're the least eccentric person I know."
It was true, of course, but if Posy had to spend her life as an old maid, she wanted to be the eccentric one with the large hat, not the desperate one with the pinched mouth.
"What is his name?"
she asked. But before Sophie could answer, they heard the front door opening, and then it was the butler giving her her answer as he announced,
"Mr. Woodson is here to see you, Mrs. Bridgerton."
Posy stashed her half-eaten biscuit under a serviette and folded her hands prettily in her lap. She was a little miffed with Sophie for inviting a bachelor for tea without warning her, but still, there seemed little reason not to make a good impression. She looked expectantly at the doorway, waiting patiently as Mr. Woodson's footsteps drew near. And then... Honestly, it wouldn't do to try to recount it, because she remembered almost nothing of what followed. She saw him, and it was as if, after 25 years of life, her heart finally began to beat. Hugh Woodson had never been the most admired boy at school. He had never been the most handsome or the most athletic. He had never